I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, the podcast that's beloved by everyone, even cynical members of Generation X. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, whose exploits are sad and boring, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry in whoop-de-doo, Tarantula Town!
Chris McGaggy and Tista, also with you.
And special guest...
I'm Dave, latex condom inhabitant Rudden.
Okay, that's awesome. And today's episode is Lady Bouvier's Lover...
I love that read.
Put that on the soundboard. Put that on the soundboard immediately.
One more time.
What smells?
I love that. That was not in the fart episode of Laser Time.
Sorry.
It's okay. And Lady Bouvier's Lover aired on May 12th, 1994. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Boo! Both The Simpsons and Home Improvement receive a beating in the ratings courtesy of the two-part television event, Stephen King's The Stand.
I watched that. M-O-N, that spells stand.
The finale of Melrose Place almost becomes the first broadcast TV show to depict two gay men kissing, and Jacqueline Bouvier, Kennedy Onassis, is dead at 64.
Really? Wow.
Holy shit.
Within a few days, yes.
Marge's mom's namesake is dead.
Marge's mom's namesake.
That's amazing timing. I didn't know that at the time. Obviously, for our parents, the death of Jackie O is a huge deal.
Yeah, I remember it was a huge deal, but I didn't make the connection. I never heard her called Bouvier ever. Mm. We also, having watched this on broadcast television, never saw this episode title ever.
No, like, no, not until the internet told us.
But looking at them together, it was very close. It's within a week of her death is within the week of this episode with her namesake.
And the and the title of this is a reference to a sexy, scandalous book of a long, long time ago, Lady Chatterley's Lover.
Mm. And it was an even sexier movie in 1981.
And I don't want to harp on this too much because I had never seen Grey Gardens. And if you haven't, it's great.
There's it's great.
A Documentary Now parody that's also great. There's a sequel that's also great, but that is Jackie O's cousins.
Right.
And they're a lot like Patty and Selma. Spinsters who live alone, except, you know, at least Patty and Selma have power.
And they don't have a raccoon living in their house.
People from former wealth and a giant decaying house who never leave and can't grow hair. I don't know how much of a connection there is there, but Grey Gardens people.
Well, this is a great episode of it is an Oakley Weinstein special of elderly jokes. They love the elderly so much.
Yes, and according to Oakley and Weinstein, the pilot that they wanted to make but never could was about a bunch of old men in a submarine who all lived in the submarine and thought that World War II was still happening.
That is amazing.
They never left the war, but
it should at least be a movie.
Also, another pre-production tidbit. This is from Bill Oakley. According to him, one of the ideas in this episode was that Grandpa would get injured on Mr. Burns' property and get stuck there, just like in the movie Misery. So we could have had concurrent Critic and Simpsons Misery parodies.
Well, this Misery parody would have come 3 months after the Critics, so they'd have looked like they were really ripping it off.
Yes.
But the script was just too long, so they had to cut it away.
And I bet you if we contact Bill Oakley, he can find us those pages and scan them, because they keep everything.
Well, you know, I found a really amazing thing in research for this. On January 31st, 1994, a newspaper article was published about the table reading of this episode.
Oh, nice.
A reporter was there for the table read, and it is called Simpson Actors Voice Their Appreciation. From reading the article, you would think that there is one writer on The Simpsons named Dave Merkin.
Not Groening draws it all, right?
And that actors make up everything, and that no drawings happen. It just magically appears.
Very easy.
As it's described, like Dave Merkin takes the writer through how they do a table read, and they basically describe the writers as a collective of dorks who just rewrite something when it doesn't get a joke. And the only real people they talk to in it are the actors, but... they do it for the first table reading of this, and there's some interesting things that are cut from the episode that we only find out from reading this table reading. First off, the writer says Maggie says her second word in this episode, which is spaghetti. So apparently there was a joke that Maggie says spaghetti at her birthday party.
Hopefully her second word is sequel, right?
Hopefully it's after Homer mispronouncing Pischetti.
and also that Dan Castellaneta was testing out a Ross Perot impersonation, which Ross Perot will be mentioned later in here in the episode, but he doesn't appear on screen. And then lastly, It really shows you Harry Shearer. Even back then, he's like, you know, they really lost track of the characters at the start of the season, but it's gotten a lot better now. So
wow, he's on tape saying that in the
season? Quoted in that in this table read in the middle of at the end of season 5.
I think he liked working with Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein more than David Merkin. He thanked them when they left, and apparently he doesn't do that a lot.
Well, they didn't say names, but I think they really implied that in the George Bush episode that Oakley and Weinstein did. That Harry Shearer was the one who's just like, this isn't political commentary. Like, he was mad at what they say that one cast member was mad it wasn't as political as
it had to be Harry Shearer.
I feel
stop being apolitical.
Anyway, yeah, this episode is about old people, but it starts with the youngest character on The Simpsons having
a nice contrast.
A strong episode opening is monkeys tearing apart Sideshow Mel.
Man, that one's really going for his throat.
It feels very realistic of, like, when you read about ape attacks at zoos, you're like, they go for, like, your throat or your genitals. They just go straight for it.
But Mel had it coming. He poked that monkey in the head.
Yeah. I was looking down, and it just, why is Homer being attacked by, it sounds so much like Homer being attacked.
It's the screaming, even with a great voice actor like Dan Castellaneta, screaming is hard to do in character.
Yeah, it is.
And that's also when I learned the word credenza. And
we had an interview with Paul Credenza, didn't we?
It's a rare visit to the rumpus room.
Yeah, that I felt like the last time we saw that was when Lightning Strikes.
Yes, in 3 Men in a Comic Book.
Or it's reused in the Big Brother episode.
I meant to keep track of every time the rumpus room.
Is it just because of the credenza in there?
It's just the other room they can have TV. If they don't want the characters in the living room, they got to be there.
But it exists in subspace, right? It just materializes, and there's a portal you walk into.
I've seen architectural layouts. It's there canonically, I believe. There's just almost no reason for anybody to be in there because it means one person is watching TV.
Well, in our Patreon exclusive interview with Paul Provenzano, he talks about how they had to make a layout for all that stuff, including the house.
Yeah, video games, baby.
For virtual Springfield. But I just love this. I love this line so much.
Homer, you didn't do a very good job frosting Maggie's birthday cake.
What? It's not McGaggy's birthday? Oh.
Hey, stop it. I made a special cake for you to ruin. It's over there.
I love the cake because it really looks like a pair of jams I had in the 80s.
Only part of the cake that Homer really wants is the letters.
He just wants to eat the letters off of it. And that Marge has gotten to the point where she knows Homer will destroy everything, so I just have to give him a different thing to destroy.
I am that person, though, because if I'm eating stuff off of the cake, I'm not technically eating the cake, so I will pick at it and get away with not eating. I didn't eat cake at all.
Yeah. My little brother, famously in our family, he did that when he was like 5. He had his birthday cake, but like, he can't have it yet. And so he just like licked off a lot of the icing, or well, not licked, like put his tongue on the cake, but just scooped it off and ate it.
Yummy. That's better.
And so when my parents discovered it, they asked him, like, did you eat the icing off this? He's like, no, bad guys did it. And that was a saying in the family for a while of bad guys did it.
Did you submit that to Bill Keene for the family circus? It sounds like a perfect one, perfect one of those.
Well, it would have been a good nobody. Like, yeah, nobody did it. It was not me. That's the joke. Oh, God.
The ghost of his grandfather who did it. Who haunts him every day.
That grandfather ghost, man, that was creepy. I felt like I was definitely keen thinking about his own mortality quite a lot in the when it was so much more pointed at the elderly and family circus in the 20 years I read it with. I didn't want to read it, but it was a comic strip section.
No, I not read it.
I love that comic. Bought a bunch of books of it. God, those Billy Mays ones are amazing. Don't deny it.
So Julie Kavner really gets a workout in this episode. Yeah. This is the most... When the doorbell rings and Marge lets in Patty and Selma...
Oh, man.
It has to be the only time ever that Julie Kavner voices 4 characters in the same breath. Of like, no other character interrupts them. Marge to Patty to Jacqueline to Selma.
Maybe the Thanksgiving episode, but that's it.
Maybe.
And so Jacqueline Bouvier is Marge's mom. She appears in the Thanksgiving episode and in this episode, and then not for, what, another 20 years or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
really?
Just to die? Did they kill her?
I thought
she never died. I know they bring her back when they explain how her father died, how Marge's dad died. And you see her more in flashbacks. I think they just don't get a lot out of her, and it hurts Julie's voice. Mm-hmm. And like, she's not very interesting in here. In this episode, they dropped the thing they gave her in Thanksgiving, which was that she judges everything Marge does and nothing satisfies her.
And she's incredibly dour. And in this episode, I'm going to say she's not really even a character. She's just there for people to react to her and just to be placed in situations for other characters to perform.
That's true. Her drive, she's given the lightest of character motivations. She's just, even, well, because they can't make her senile. Like, Abe is just Mr. Senile. Mm. So she just has to be, at best, desperate for attention.
Before we get into the Maggie's ailments thing, we do see another appearance of Gerald. So Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein's episodes are sort of pushed to the end of the season. So you see a lot of the same characters and jokes, like, back to back.
Yeah.
So we see another appearance of Gerald. Maggie doesn't get along with the other babies. There are no other babies.
Yes, that's such a weird delivery by Yardley Smith. Maggie doesn't get along with all the other babies.
Yeah,
except for the other babies.
It's clearly Lisa is worried, but saying the other babies twice, it is
it's not the baby with one eyebrow's first appearance.
No.
It's the first and only appearance by the burly black neighbor who Grandpa rings the doorbell of.
Which was so weird, like, that someone lives, like, adjacent to the Simpsons, never interacts with them.
Yeah.
Kind of looked like a black version of the main Shelbyville dad from the
Shake it, boy, like the
same overalls and
in two years, big
round head.
In 2 years, they would knock that house down and build the Bush mansion. Yes. So we'll see that soon.
I love that. Happy birthday!
It's one of my favorite birthday clips to see on someone's Facebook.
Yeah, but from across the street that you hear it,
and
too.
That he's mixing up a giant black man with a little yellow baby.
Yeah, I think they made that guy black on purpose. You're right, Dave. Yes. I was just like, that wasn't a random choice.
It's and then you just get a lot of, like, cute observational stuff of what it's like to attend a baby's birthday party. Because the baby doesn't care. It doesn't. It likely doesn't know it's at a first birthday party.
Yeah, very, very David Silvermany drawings of people with cameras looking like Cyclops.
The camera monsters was great, and it was so. Yes, you're right. It was very much the Silverman curve on people.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those
it's
things.
All your fault.
I'm glad I moved away from my hometown because I don't have to go to baby's first birthday parties, and I see pictures of it and videos of it now, and I'm like, this is. It's humiliating.
Yeah. On the rare occasion I do, like, it's like a friend. Mm-hmm. So it's like a bunch of friends, some of them who have kids, some of them who don't, and we just drink. Mm-hmm. And somehow that's allowed around kids.
I've just seen videos of people dancing and singing happy birthday to a thing with no brain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because we live in, like, the magical land where...
Children aren't allowed!
Yeah.
Well, our one friend who does have two children now, he told me the thing he likes about birthday parties is it's just the excuse to hang out with other parents. Yeah. Like, that's really
so
what it is. Yeah.
One thing about the two cakes, though, I just remembered, is that I know people with children not in the city because they're banned from the city, of course. But like Homer and Marge, they bake the baby like a smash cake is what it's called. They can put the cake down in front of the baby for the baby to, like, smash and ruin. Then they eat a separate cake. So we love wasting food in America. It's fun.
Cake. Yeah.
then we get into another Oakley Weinstein thing, which, like, these are all fake. I looked them up. They made them up, but they all sound very real.
Put some Lister's carbolic unguent on a wad of cotton. Put the cotton in your ear. That'll stop them shakes.
No. What she needs is a balsam specific.
Balsam specific? While we're burning money, why don't we give her a curative galvanic pill, too?
Don't forget to give her Smeckler's powder.
Don't make fun!
So, Henry, these are all fake things, but they all have roots in real treatments.
Oh, really?
So, Lister's carbolic unguent. Carbolic acid is an antiseptic. You can buy carbolic soap. And unguent just means, like, a lotion or a cream or an ointment. Balsam specific. So the word specific in this case means a remedy for a specific ailment. Balsam is tree sap.
Jesus.
So it's like a remedy made of tree sap. And the curative galvanic belt did exist. It was an old-timey treatment, like an electric belt you wore under your clothing that would give you shocks throughout the day to give you more energy.
Wow.
Of course it didn't work. So
electricity, is there anything it can't do?
These are all real things, and I'm sure Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein had some ancient almanac they
were
looking
through. I want
that
glossary of old people terms so bad.
That's beautiful. Man, well, thank you, Bob. You beat me in the research round this time.
Research wars will never end.
That was a common, don't forget Smeckler's powder. It was always like at Game Pro's common line when, like, two people are talking about, like, an ancient TV show or something. Like.
I like how even in the animation, Bart kind of lifts his lip up to look more old. And I kind of like that scene, too, even though he's yelling at her.
Balsam specific!
But it shows an early connection between the two of them. That, like, Abe never has anybody he can talk who talks his language of old things. He just mentions stuff no one's ever heard of, and then they ignore him.
It's kind of like a screwball comedy where he's arguing with the woman he will fall in love with. So it's
true.
Old-timey in that
way,
too.
It's quite a meet-cute. And then comes a commercial... So Maggie goes to bed, and it's actually, I love they brought back the cutaway through the floor gag. I haven't seen one of those in a long time. And then they talk about other cute things that Bart and Lisa did, and them being forced to entertain at a party. That's another, like, very kid party thing. Yeah. Just
especially when the parents are drunk. Yes, we saw that in the War of the Simpsons, like, do that cute thing you do.
Yeah. Then you know how to do.
Go to bed.
Yes, now it's time to hear about hot dogs.
Yeah.
Hot dogs. Armor hot dogs.
Sing it like you mean it.
What kinds of kids eat armor hot dogs?
Fat kids.
Skinny kids.
Kids who climb on rocks.
Tough kids.
Dizzy kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs. Hot dogs. Kids love to fight.
Doesn't this family know any songs that aren't commercials?
I feel like chicken tonight.
Ugh, I love hearing Grandpa's pain singing.
Chicken tonight!
I love that one of the most dated aspects of The Simpsons are when they quote contemporary commercial jingles.
Yes.
Yeah. Some movies will be relevant forever, but Chicken Tonight, I don't even think is a product in America.
But I remember at that time, Chicken Tonight was huge.
It was huge. Yes. There's a semi-funny Australian clip of a product called Dickhead Tonight. Everybody gets up and dances like a chicken.
Well, let's tackle these ads in order.
Oh, please.
So the Armor Hot Dog commercial ad came out in the 60s, and it was funny. It's something I call the Wiener Wars, in that they both had catchy jingles. I wish I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Yep.
And this was the other competing catchy jingle. So let's hear it. It's identical, but this is the 60s version.
Hot dogs. Armor hot dogs. What kind of kids eat armor hot dogs?
Fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks.
Wait a second. Cut. Because I got another commercial for this, and it makes me laugh so much because it's just a style of music that existed all over the place in the late 70s into the mid 80s. It's the Armor Hot Dog song, but it's just, it's a style of music you never hear, and it just constantly makes me giggle.
Hot dog, hot dog, what kind of kids eat our hot dog? Big kids, little kids, kids who lend a hand, brainy kids.
Just the voice of like the Bill on Capitol Hill.
The tough stand cleaner, that's all.
I don't know what style that is, but we have not heard anybody that in years.
It was only recently I heard that.
It's like Taz's dad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you see, son, you got to eat the hot dogs.
Bing Crosby. I'm a hot dog.
If you look up that clip on YouTube, that is like a Kid All Star commercial.
It really is, yeah. I mean,
you got boys have a penis, girls have a vagina, and the girl that was on Growing Pains.
Oh, wow. The younger Growing Pains girl.
It's
right?
The one I remember, and I just love that
song. So the one thing I learned recently is that the term sissy is kind of a gay slur. I don't know if you guys have heard this before.
Oh, like, certainly.
Like, I mean,
have you heard it, Henry?
Imagine, I mean, we use this word all the time, but only later in life it's like, oh, I guess, I mean, it's sort of like just saying faggy. Like, so imagine if the song was like tough kids, faggy kids. Like, what? Does that seem shocking?
It is pretty shocking, yes. That word was defanged in our generation.
Yeah,
Like, it means a somewhat fake kid, which obviously should be judged because
a real
gender
Nancy.
Roles are specific.
Yeah.
I think that's why they didn't... Sissy Kids wasn't in that other one, right?
I don't think they have Sissy Kids in that one.
No, they didn't. They changed it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Coward
it was. I just wanted to hear that guy's voice. I love it. Makes me laugh so much. I went above and beyond because I'm obsessed with old foods.
No, it's great. And Chicken Tonight, of course, is a kind of sauce you cook chicken in by the Ragu Company.
I was so disappointed to find out it's just a sauce.
It's just a sauce.
Make with chicken.
Wow. Yeah.
A marinade.
Ragu introduces Chicken Tonight Simmer Sauces, and suddenly everybody's saying,
I feel like chicken tonight, chicken
people
tonight.
Dancing
choose
like chickens.
From four new sauces. Each one's
Sauces, everybody. Four flavors. 90s.
If someone really savvy out there will do it, just put in like Job's chicken dance noise to these people dancing like chickens for Chicken Tonight. I checked. It's still a popular brand in the UK.
Oh.
I had to go all out with Armor Hot Dogs because basically it's the story of America.
Hmm.
I couldn't believe that they're still around in the 90s.
Like, yeah, that's what I remember coming out.
You can buy Armor hot dogs right now.
Yeah, really? You can buy Armor hot dogs right now, but the amount of times it's changed hands is the story of corporate America.
Oh, really?
Yes, they even donated a bunch of hot dogs what is it, the Spanish-American Civil War.
Whoa.
Which then, if they, 500,000 hot dogs, which then poisoned thousands of soldiers.
Oh, boy.
Jesus Christ.
Biological warfare?
The Armor Hot Dog Division also created Dial Soap, which ended up surpassing the popularity of the hot dogs. Then they created Dial Soap. It was Dial Soap in the mid-20th century, and then were sold to the Greyhound Bus Corporation.
Wow. What?
And then to Revlon, and then a German company who sold off the non-Dial food assets, where Dial is now its own company, to Pinnacle Foods, and they still, Armor Hot Dogs are apparently still around. I've never seen them, and they might be most famous for the non-lunchable lunch maker upstart that tries to challenge the Oscar Mayer Lunchable with stacking crackers with cheese and ham.
Well, when I was a kid, there was a period where I'd have hot dogs like every other day for lunch, but it would be without the bun, because I told my mom I really liked how in old cartoons old cartoons, when you see a hobo with a hot dog on a stick, I'd be like, I want to eat like that. So I'd get that with a fork.
It was the first food I could make.
So many memories of eating an Armor hot dog while watching Gumby cartoons and thinking like, this is the life.
We should have rescued you.
Cosplaying as a poor person.
And I guess, though, my preferred hot dog brand now is Hebrew National or Nathan's. Those are my two favorites. It's got to be all beef, because I want the parts of the brains and feet that get mashed together in a hot dog. It better be from a cow.
I'm an Oscar Mayer Wiener kid, and it's because of those white spots in it. I don't know what it is, but it's
those white spots.
I will eat a hot dog from a cart. Just anything before that process I find repulsive and disgusting. Like a slimy, cold, pink... it's awful. I'm fine getting it at a cart, though. I love hot dogs.
But chicken tonight, like... Can't you just put seasoning on your chicken? Like, do you have to drown it in...
Because I made sure to look stupidly, closely at the brand. It's just like dressings and salsa.
It's like Hamburger Helper, where it's like, this isn't actually the
thing. I think it's if you want to make chicken parmesan eat it with pasta.
It's basically Alfredo sauce or salsa. Yeah.
I like the name of it, though.
Honey mustard.
I think that's maybe why it's less popular in America now, that it implies a family would cook together and like, I'm making chicken tonight.
Well, it's... Not just to harp too much on it, it's just a product that's available everywhere else under different names. It's just sauces, but they're marketing it as for your chicken.
It's smart of Ragu.
So Matlock is going to be on, and the Matlock train's coming, and they got to get on it.
Matlock
could be our last.
I never heard the line, each Matlock could be our last.
And I think Matlock was canceled at this point.
I looked it up. Matlock that would be their last would air on May 7th, 1995. So a year from this episode.
The last episode, because they had a ton of TV movies.
This was the last episode. Okay. So then they probably had TV movies, but it's called The Scam, Part 1 and 2, here on May 7th, 1995.
And I like that Miss Bouvier, she enjoys Matlock too, because in Springfield, every old person loves Matlock. And I also like Homer's, the cruelty implied of Homer's, like, or Christmas. Like, he was like, please don't come. You don't have to come for Thanksgiving.
It was a nice reference to how that's the last time we saw her, too.
That's
just
true.
Like, she wasn't that Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah. Did they show Miss Bouvier's retirement home?
We'll get to that in a second.
I thought it was weird that Patty and Selma drove to the Simpsons house in a Jeep.
Yeah, that car.
Not just a Jeep. The Jeep Hanson is driving in the Mbop video. Yeah. It's not quite a Humvee.
It's so strangely specific, and I've never seen them drive a car before.
Oakley and Weinstein really like the idea of surplus army jeeps, and
true.
Patty and Selma are cheap, obviously.
It's not just a lesbian thing.
No.
We can hear the story of those surplus army jeeps in that Bill Oakley interview. Go back through the archives, folks.
I don't know if it was for like the three frames of Jacqueline Bouvier's hair like going backwards as they
Maybe
speed
that's
away, but
it
was like,
we don't want to draw her hair getting smashed down.
We want to make a Kennedy assassination reference.
Also, I was wrong. She did appear in Selma's Choice at the Aunt Gladys funeral.
I like that Marge is so pro this from the beginning. Like it gives Marge something to do, an interesting character trait that she wants to set up her mom with Abe Simpson, of all people. I really wouldn't do that.
Homie, you know, it's funny. Both my mother and your father seem pretty lonely.
That is funny.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe they could go to a matinee together, or shopping, or to that room in the library that's always full of old people and periodicals, that's it.
Marge, please, old people don't need companionship. They need to be isolated and studied so it can be determined what nutrients they have that might be extracted for our personal use.
Homer, would you please stop reading that Ross Perot pamphlet?
I love that line. Like, no!
So, what was this joke? I mean, it's a funny joke, but was it referencing anything specific? Any specific Ross Perot plans?
I don't remember enough about him, but he was an independent candidate, but probably would have been the Republican candidate had that been open
well,
to
right.
him.
Yeah, but I think it was just he was viewed as a kook, and this could be another kooky idea he had.
I just don't remember those types of ideas. Not like fierce libertarian, utilitarian use for old people.
As a kid, I was like, why would Ross Perot write that when he's old?
Well, Ross Perot's, well, because he's a rich old guy. Yeah. You don't do that to him, but
I'm special.
No, I think that I think it came from just the root of like Ross Perot in 92 was a big ass deal, and people wondered if he'd run again in 96.
He did.
But in 94, he was kind of in the middle, and he was. If people were used to him just coming out of left field with plans because he didn't have to talk to the Republican committee or the Democrat committee. So he's just like, well, here's my crazy plan. It worked in my business. And so
everyone has one gay experience.
And so you can extrapolate harvesting the organs of old people as well. And Homer just laughing that it is funny. And
it is funny.
But I liked periodical sections. It was a fun way at the library to read every magazine for free.
The newspapers had those awesome wooden swords attached to
them. Oh, yeah. Those wooden swords.
A fucking kendo stick in wrestling with a newspaper stuck in it.
I have done the Homer thing where someone says, it's funny that this is happening, or this is whatever, and I'm like, yeah, that is funny.
It is funny.
When people really mean interesting, they don't mean literally funny.
Yes.
Now, I haven't been to a library too often. I don't think I see old people specifically in the periodical section.
I mean, this
anymore.
Is different. We just see homeless people in libraries.
Well, libraries, it's what I love on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. They really understand that the library is where you go to the internet when you don't have a computer. And it's where homeless people store pornography.
I go pretty frequently because my girlfriend doesn't like to buy books but reads constantly.
Smart.
It's beautiful, but just everywhere around you. Like, I never knew I could recognize a recently released prisoner. Just on site, but this is a guy whose clothes are like 12 years old.
They've got stripes on them. He's holding
he's got a cannonball chain to his leg. Yeah. No, but you'll see people who are clearly like trying to get their lives together. Nothing like crazy or anything like that, but their clothes are too old and they're trying to get old Korean women watching soap operas, as homeless as far as the eye can see.
Which, hey, I mean, that's fine. Libraries should be
supporting. That's what they're there for.
Fuck yeah.
They need a bathroom.
Dude, they have free DVDs, video games, comic books. I go there, too. And shit, it's down right
down
the road.
You pay a lot of taxes for it, so jump on board.
People in the city complain that, this street smells like urine. Mm-hmm. Like, well, if they had free bathrooms everywhere, then it wouldn't smell that way. But you wouldn't want tax dollars paying for that.
That bathroom is a nightmare. I dare you.
I wouldn't. But I hate all public bathrooms, as I said here. I don't like using it. Then we go to the other retirement home in Springfield.
It's actually, I think it's like independent living or something like that, or like assisted living. I don't think it's a retirement home. They're apartments.
That's true. It's not as bad as Retirement Castle.
I wanted to dig into the reference.
Oh, yeah.
The Hal Roach Retirement Home. And I don't really get it still.
I mean, it's just an old-timey reference because Hal Roach, of course, is the producer of Our Gang, known as Little Rascals, and Laurel and Hardy
he's
shorts.
He's the producer of, like, mainly Our Gang.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the things I did read about him, he lived almost to be 101.
Yeah.
Wow.
So perhaps it's a reference to how long he not only, like, outlived three of his children who died of old age.
Wow.
He outlived almost every single Little Rascal.
That's incredible.
The children he produced and things. So maybe it was there to be like, yeah, Hal Roach. But he had just died. Like at the time he produced this
in 92.
Episode.
Yeah. But I wonder if he stayed in touch with Mo.
I would think he excommunicated him after he murdered one of the original Little Rascals.
We get a very very sad.
This
joke
is my
here.
Favorite sad
it's
joke
so sad.
In the whole series. So
that's not my mother.
I'll be back in a jiffy.
Can I come too?
they're politely ignoring her.
Yeah. Her design is great too. That she looks like Abe. As someone as adult today as Abe could mistake her for Bouvier.
Yeah.
But that she's so sad. She's like, can I come too? Uh-huh.
It does combine two of my favorite kind of Simpsons jokes, which is an old person being sad and a person who looks just like another character.
And just their lack of eye contact as they roll up a window. It's just so
it's a great
like,
drawing.
Yeah, it's nice cruelty. Like it's just like, well, this is polite cruelty.
So hasn't it? Has it been established in a previous episode that they have the rolly windows and not the
I think no, it does go him. Back and forth.
Yeah.
I think the Rolly window. I mean, I think the power windows underline the joke. Sound of like
that sounds better. Yeah. I believe it was a. I believe it was a power window when they get attacked by the lions at the
Discount Lion Safari.
Discount Lion Safari. Yeah. Boy, that word was just not coming in my head there.
But that was another joke that I would make at work at GamePro and like back in the day when I hear like two cubicle mates. Saying like, "Oh, let's go to the bar after work." I would just like instant message them with that that clip.
So next we go to Piggly Hog Swine Super Smorg. I love that.
Love that too. It's
Piggly Hog Swine.
I had to add because look, I'm from the South. Obviously, we had Piggly Wiggly's. That was the grocery chain. But I think it was very local. We had an upstart group of gas stations called the Hoggly Woggly. I've never seen another outside of Florida in my life. So I don't think they were all over the place.
I only heard of Piggly Wiggly's. I lived in Ohio. It was because it was an easy, funny name for a store that people could use in sitcoms. It's, like, I'm going to go down to the Piggly Wiggly.
Come and eat my guts. I'm a pig.
Well, that pig face is funny, which the hog swine's face is kind of the Piggly Wiggly face, and that it's great that he's serving another pig to
serving
you
up himself.
And it is a perfect old folks meal place to do it. Like, well, let's just go to a cafeteria / style buffet place
and eat dinner at 2 p.m.
Yes, though
we talked about that somewhere else, but that is a gross restaurant style. I do remember the cafeteria style. It was not always drive through and sit down. That's an old aristocratic thing.
Yeah.
You had cafeterias everywhere. And I from before I was 10, we had one left. Morrison's. There was a chain called Morrison's where you'd bring a tray down, select what you want, and pay for what you get. And we only have one kind of restaurant now.
Yeah, well, I think the cafeteria just graduated into the buffet, which is a similar setup of, like, you pick what you want, but at a buffet, it's like, you just never stop.
Yeah.
You just eat all you can.
Oh, no, we have one here, Joe's Original in San Francisco, across the street from the theater, where you go and you just tell the... I don't want to call him a barbarian, but the guy... different people cut different meats, and you ask for those cuts.
He's got, like, a badge, too.
He does.
I'm the meat officer.
I only cut pork.
Well, smorgasbords, like, I remember we went to that Hofbräu every now and then at for work lunch back at our old job, and I just like that. It was like, here, just pick your meal, and we're going to cut up the meat right here, and you'd always think, like, well, that's all the meat they're giving me, and then they would give you, like, double that.
Yeah, more pig.
But both Grandpa and Jackie fell for the telemarketing scam.
Yes.
And they both didn't mind, although Grandpa thinks it's not a scam.
He thought it was just lucky. He was just like, you win a prize. Then came a scene that when I first saw it, I thought was a Benny and June parody.
Me too.
That's all I knew it from.
But it is.
No, well, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Because it is, because that was a very popular scene in Benny and June. It's more of a Benny and June reference than a Charlie Chaplin reference, because the joke is that, like, you stole this, Johnny Depp.
But, yes, but in it, he was doing it to entertain a girl who was sad. So this reason for doing it is similar to Benny and June, not to the Chaplin original.
But Burns' lawyer mentions the Charlie Chaplin.
He does, but that's why I think it's so funny. It's both. And I think Fresh in Your Mind was... this scene in Benny and June, which is in every commercial and trailer.
Right. I mean, we are bearing the lead here. This is from the 1925 movie, The Gold Rush, with Charlie Chaplin. I didn't
get
a
really good
because it's a silent
it's
movie.
Silent.
And you're not going to get anything out of that.
And I like how the hired goons, who are the goons who work for Mr. Burns as well, bend the fork and stomp on the potato. It just, I think.
It's like Crusher and Low Blow or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Due to us arguing over the reference, that's why I love it so much, because it's making fun of Benny and June.
I know Benny and June brought it into the zeitgeist, but throughout this whole episode, Grandpa is stealing bits from, like, turn-of-the-century comedians. So
I have a theory about why they keep doing this. I think it was this episode is really good, but it is a late-season episode, and it feels like we need 5 minutes of references. So it has a lot that are kind of tacked on.
Yeah.
And I feel like moments like that is Dave Merkin punishing the writers of just saying, like, you know what, you can't just make a reference. The reference police will show up and punish you for too many references.
But not with Family Guy.
Excuse me. Well, Dave Merkin doesn't work for Family Guy.
That's
so
true. So up next, they're in her apartment, and... I, after being educated way too much, I'm in such debt to many institutions, but I finally really got this joke. So Jackie is saying she drove all of her friends crazy, then she names three names, and I'm like, oh, those are all authors, and they're all so old. The joke is she knew a lot of other old people.
That's what I thought, too.
But it turns out, knowing who these people are now, they all had serious mental illness problems that led to their deaths in many cases. So Zelda Fitzgerald, F. Scott's wife, a writer of her own right, Frances Farmer, an actress and TV host, she was also had some mental problems.
They were both institutionalized.
And Sylvia Plath killed herself with an oven, with the Gasserman oven.
She was the writer of The Bell Jar.
That's true.
With a sign on her back that said no funeral.
Yes.
Oh, that was mine.
As a very uncultured kid, like when I first saw this scene at like, what, 13 or 14 years old, I was like, those are funny old lady names.
Yeah.
I mean, they still are, but
there's thousands of things that go over your head in this episode.
I think potentially Sylvia Plath could have been Jackie's friend, but Zelda Fitzgerald and Frances Farmer were both born in the early 1900s, so they would have been much older than Jackie.
That's true. By the time Jackie would have met them, they would have, like, F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda would have been hanging out with Ernest Hemingway at that point. But it's a great use of oldie time names. Yeah. Frances Farmer was the one I had to look up this time. I had forgotten her. But that Zelda, by the way, guys, you read her work because she's the inspiration for The Legend of Zelda. I'm trying to get people to read.
There you go. In Japan, Zelda Fitzgerald's name is Doki Doki Panic. So look that one up.
It was a really cool article I read about how I didn't know that The Great Gatsby was a big hit in Japan. Yeah. It really came over there. And Haruki Murakami, who is popular over here, he is a Japanese novelist who... He is one of the people who localized Great Gatsby for his generation because he loves The Great Gatsby that much. So it's not surprising that if he's trying to find a name for a princess, Shigeru Miyamoto would pick Princess Zelda.
Makes sense.
Then Abe has some interesting feelings that he can't figure out.
You're so sweet.
Ooh, I feel all funny. I'm in love. No, wait. It's a stroke. No, wait! It is love! I'm in love!
Look, I love this. This is going into commercial, but I love this. This shot is awesome because Abe merges correctly.
Yeah.
He gets right on the freeway.
They don't stop the ambulance to let him out either. According to the commentary, this scene went on for a lot longer with Grandpa ending up in a lot of things before he realized he was in love. Like, I'm in Texas. I'm in Blake. I'm in love. Yeah.
That's cute. But I just like the ambulance guys tossing him out, and it's a nice callback to so many previous Simpsons smash cut to ambulance jokes. They love that. In Act 2, we finally get the B story of this episode.
Yeah, and I forgot we have another Roger Myers Jr. not voiced by Alex Rocco.
It is just one line, so I get why they didn't get Alex Rocco, but it annoys me hearing Hank Azaria.
Hello, I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from such films as The Boat Jacking of Supership 79 and Hydro, the Man with the Hydraulic Arms. Coming up this hour on the Impulse Buying Network, your chance to own a piece of Itchy and Scratchy, the Toontown twosome beloved by everyone, even cynical members of Generation X.
Yeah. Groovy.
I love that they stick it to Gen X.
Yeah. That's their first swing at what will be the plot of Homer Palooza. Is the Homer Palooza kid.
Somebody came up with a name for us. We're Zillennial.
I saw that.
How do you say it?
Zillennial. I've only seen it written two. It's
Generation X with Millennials. If you're born between...
X-E-N and then the Ennial.
I wanted a classification.
Yeah, it is the people stuck in between Gen X and Millennial. If you were born in between 80 and 85, I think is the classification.
I like the MTV generation. I like that label.
At least it was on there. But so I love the image of Bart in bed with the mini TV next to him. I did that a bunch of times. Like, it was a great... And just him staying up late to watch TV.
My grandfather had a black and white projection-based Sony Watchman, which I thought was the greatest invention ever because I could watch things in my hands.
Doesn't he have a TV on the counter in his room where he watched Tuesday Night Live
with Krusty? Yes. But that might be the rumpus room TV. And was that when he was sick? When he was brought upstairs?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then this is kind of a parody of selling Simpsons cells at high markup, which was even a thing in 94.
Yeah, and people who didn't know how animation worked be like, oh, a cell, I'll get a nice drawing of Homer, but it'll just be like his muzzle or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and as I'm not going to do it anymore, but I had a great time in my spare time recently trying to find animation cells on eBay, and it's really fun because you have to find the difference between enormously expensive ones and the cheap ones. And part of that is there are thousands of animation cells for the worst show, but they're mostly an arm, or they're a character looking away off screen or walking out of a door, and it's half their body.
Yeah.
And you can get all that shit for like $2.
But I love the attainability of most cells.
Yeah.
If you like, you probably watched one Saturday morning cartoon you liked as a kid that nobody gives a shit about, and you can own 1/24th of a second of it for under $10 if it's unpopular.
I was collecting
enough.
Them like this show sucks. Yes. The Fantastic Four, but this painting of the thing rules.
Now, if you want one from a classic Disney thing, you're paying fucked. $5,000
unless
for
you
it.
Get one of like them exiting a room or something in between where they're just moving an arm.
Well, and getting the background makes a big difference too, and I like that Russ Meyer shows the he shows the cell you think you're going to get of like, oh, both characters in a key pose. Like, and no, it's something that would have one arm would just be that on the static background is itchy or scratchy, not moving. Mm-hmm. And so they can
or on different cell layer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it, and there have been tons of people who've probably been bought fake Simpson cells or at a high markup or
there's Simpson a lot of stolen cell. Ones.
And they talk about on the commentary too that, yeah, that there were tons stolen that Matt Groening was trying to tell them, like, watch, these cells are going to get taken. Mm-hmm. And Fox is like, eh, who cares?
Yeah. As a little animation nerd, it always annoyed me when people would buy cells or collect them. Mm-hmm. And then I look at them like, this is not a cell used in animation. Yeah. This is a reproduction. It's like one of 1,000 identical things they made to give to you.
If you go to a Disney, I remember you would go to a Disney store and it's like, look, here's a cell of Bambi.
Yeah.
And there were tons of them. And like, none of those are real.
No, not they're not real.
They had only sold official real cells in Disneyland for a little bit and then stopped. I don't think they do it anymore. Yeah.
There was a story I heard, like, Kurt Russell as a kid, and he just took home giant piles of cells and was, like, skating on them in his garage.
Oh,
he was like, this is fun.
Destroying art.
Yes, and you can get Simpson cells, but cells barely exist anymore anyway because digital has taken over.
Thanks to Keith, if you listened to the Rosebud episode, I said I was going to bid on a cell. Mm-hmm. I sent in I tried to lowball him. He said, fuck you, and didn't do it. And then I didn't buy it. I'm just like, fuck it, I'm not going to pay for it. So our buddy Keith lowballed him even worse when the auction was ending, bought that cell for me.
Wow.
But because he's a patron, I'm like, I'm not taking any more money. But he got a much better deal. So someday that cell is going to show up in our house. No pressure,
it's got to be right there.
We got to stare at it. Yeah, then Bart steals Homer's credit card to order it. And it was
that is too much, by the way. I've never... ever
350
paid the Simpson cell from Rosebud.
Mm.
It was, I think, $200 at the most.
And in 1994, dollars $350 was really like $700 today.
And there were like three characters in that cell, so that's pretty good for that much action in a cell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the joke of Homer and Bart stealing each other's things with a bump into, like, that was just a sequel of the Boy Who Knew Too Much joke of them passing by each other.
Yeah, expect them to have a fake mustache on.
And just to rattle this off real quick, I'm going to go out of my way from here on out, because this is when it starts, of Troy McClure calling out his movie title, seeing if I can find their reference material. The hydraulic arms guy, that's just a thing.
Dr. Anyway. Octopus from the space.
It's none of the boat jacking of Super Boat, whatever.
Super Ship 79.
As both entitled a parody of the hijacking of the Achille Lotto.
Wow.
And the final film in the airport series, the Concorde Ellipses. Airport 79, the finale of the dumbass airport movies.
You really want to put a year on your movie title.
Yeah,
makes
it
last
forever.
You tell us in 1970 in my movie, there's ellipses in it.
You Europeans will know it as Airport 80, because you did not see it until a year later.
This is the first time I've seen Troy on the show since I've seen Doug McClure films, and I never watched a whole one of them before, but two of them are in this season of Mystery Science Theater 3000 in the new season. And when I see him, I'm like, you are Troy McClure, Doug McClure. So you are exactly him.
I had the exact same reaction as you, Henry. Like, wow, this is Troy McClure. I'm watching a Troy McClure movie. This is great.
And the Doug McClure in both the movies, no matter what the setting, is like, I should be wearing a turtleneck. He loves that. Maybe he was a little worried about it, where his neck fat was, and he's like, no, I wear a turtleneck. And
Bart steals Homer's visa.
Yeah, all those cards for Homer, it's something I get slightly sensitive about. I don't like when Homer is written as too sexual.
Yeah.
Like, that he's, like, bawdy, or that he's
really into boobs.
Yeah, that he's too horny. I don't like a horny...
What was, like, a federal breast inspector card, and what else was there?
Yes, the federal breast inspector. Damn it, I should have written it down.
Sorry.
But I thought he was a butt guy, because he compliments Marge on her butt that won't quit.
Yeah,
$5.
Get out of here.
So, yeah, he pays $350 for it, meanwhile, Marge is trying to set up a date, and...
You know, Abe had a very nice time with you last Sunday.
Tell her I love her!
Grandpa, shh! I know my mother. If you come on too strong, she's going to get scared away.
I love ya!
What? I love you, Mom!
I love you, Mom!
Gotta go!
But with the way phones work, if Marge hangs up, Abe will still be on the phone.
True.
Because the line is still active.
You should have called this clip, Chris tries to get a girlfriend.
I love you. I love you. Love you.
I love you already.
He'll come on too strong. And, oh, yeah, right before that was the great... I love that drawing of the Simpsons in human style. In real, it's almost King of the Hill.
Like, it really
it's,
is. It's yeah,
very close.
And I like that Homer thinks they will be retroactively inbred.
Yes, yeah. That should be the album picture. I love that photo.
It will be.
I mean, okay, A, retroactively inbred. B, Abe and Jackie are not related to each other.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's like, I like the two levels it works on.
And the damn oppose.
Yeah.
Like,
I would wager to bet one of the first jokes about inbreeding on a television, on a network television show.
It's true. That is absolutely going to be the art that I like finally seeing. Like, where would the hairline be on Bart and Lisa?
They look horrible as little pink, realistic children.
It is a mild depiction of what could have been with too much studio tampering.
And Marge and Abe are a great combo who barely work together much. Mm-hmm. It's something I liked in the Simpsons movie of her and Abe kind of have like a back and forth about the EPA thing.
You're right,
EPA!
Gotta do that commentary, people, this month.
We're hitting the 10-year anniversary.
We'll have already done it. Mm-hmm.
This is a long clip, but I love
this
all
the,
of this.
One of my favorite gags ever.
Is this line of the show?
Let's do it. Yeah, I mean, they punch a child in the face three times, so...
That's the joke.
Yeah, hi. I got a special delivery for Homer Simpson.
That's me.
Oh. Don't write no more letters to Mr. Sinatra.
I've got a special delivery for Homer Simpson.
That's me.
Oh. Stop stealing golf balls from the driving range.
Homer Simpson, I've got a special delivery for you.
Go away.
You do not open the door, Mr. Simpson. I cannot give you your special delivery. Here's your special delivery.
Thanks.
That's for keeping me waiting.
I was mad it wasn't the Bronson guy.
It's close enough.
Delivery.
If you do not open the door, I cannot give you. And it's such a good read.
The pause of that your special delivery.
It's so ominous, too, yes, for no reason.
It's really... my favorite bit from this show, this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love that. And that they were clearly...
Don't write any more letters to Mr. Sinatra.
And
still alive.
Sinatra would
years.
Send a goon to your house, though.
Mm-hmm. I like the Italian accent on that guy too, to imply mafia. Mm-hmm. And they were so secure in the address of the house that it is 742 on the envelope. This is
says do not roll. And yeah, as someone who has a few animation cells, it is infuriating. Mm-hmm. I bought a DuckTales cell a couple years ago. That's probably the one I paid $70. Mm-hmm. I haggled with a dude at Comic-Con. It's bubbling. Like, they're very sensitive pieces of material. Yeah. It infuriates me that somebody rolled a cell, even if it was just an arm.
I've shipped so many things in eBay that they make it, no matter how clear you make it of, like, do not bend, fragile, like, they don't care.
Yes, nobody cares.
Your postman does not care. I'm sorry.
Ace Ventura, that shit down the road.
When I taped this episode, I ended up doing it off of syndication, not first run, and I remember this entire sequence was cut out, and it's kind of for good reason, like... A boy getting punched three times in the face by adults
the longest gag you can remove without affecting any of the plot.
Oh, yeah, because it just starts with, like, I got the cell now.
It's
yeah.
like, if Bart has a cell, we understand that he got it in the mail.
Yes.
Like, we don't need that being explained to us.
And I like the opening of the tube from the inside, and I know that excitement followed by disappointment of buying something in the mail and it finally coming like over a month later that you can't track online. It's you just ship it and hope it appears
6 to 8 weeks from now. So yeah, the cell has 1F21, which is this episode's production number.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And that then Lisa judges it as like, it's not worth $350, which then leads to my favorite haw haw ever.
Yeesh, how much was it? $350. Ooh.
Oh, my God, this boy is having an out-of-body experience. This is very bad for business.
It's a really good
Nelson
joke.
Sensed that Bart needed to get owned across town. He left his body to do it.
He went into a coma to get Bart dunked.
Squishy was so powerful. He is astral projecting into Bart.
And Apu is not concerned for his safety. He's like, this is very bad for business.
And then the description of a mule eating an apple, like, of Kiss, like, Kiss her like a mule eating an apple.
I do love the Play It Cool song, though. Yeah. Just like, yeah.
It has,
what you wanna do?
I know, it doesn't, but it has no direct connection to any one song. It's just something you'd see in, well, in that film that was like a parody of old sex romps of the 50s, Down With Love, they basically have songs like this. And I love how Homer acts like demure, like, when Abe puts his arm around him.
And it's really cute. I love them interacting like that.
And why don't we go out on the break here with that song?
Yeah, that will never work. If you want to make your move, you gotta play it cool. Now what you gotta do if you want to get a kiss is act real smooth and make your move like this.
Oh, I see. So if I take your advice and make your patented move, then my chances for love will slightly improve.
Now what's that rule?
Play it cool.
And then it's a very weird transition from a nighttime date of Abe to Android's dungeon, clearly in the daytime.
Yeah.
But this is one of the most accurate comic book guys ever, because the job of a comic book shop clerk in pre-eBay days was to tell you that something you had was worth nothing. And that you thought, like, well, it says collectible. It's like, this is worth nothing. I wouldn't pay you a dollar for this.
I got to get this. Just play that clip for me, please.
Okay.
Is this cell worth anything?
Let me show you something. This is a Snagglepuss drawn by Hick Heisler. It is worth something. This is an arm drawn by nobody. It is worth nothing.
Can't you give me anything for it?
I can give you this telephone. It is shaped like Mary Worth.
Oh.
No groaning in my store.
Okay. Please, give me the floor for just a minute.
Okay.
Because right. I went fucking crazy. Obviously, you know what we do. We look up every... one, that's a great appraisal of animation cells. Like, that was a really good one.
Totally. That's
if the character's looking at the camera, it's like something you'd buy in stores, but it was actually a hand-drawn animation cell. Worth a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Snagglepuss, drawn by Hig Heisler. Of course, I'm going to look this up. And I do. There is no Google listing other than this joke. Wow. Some people say that's a real person. Other people say it's not. I can't find a listing for any... Hold on. Okay. I got it. This is leading you, Bob.
Okay.
I'm looking all over for this answer. I dig out old animation books and look up into the appendices of books about Hanna-Barbera to see if I can find this person. I cannot. Some people online say he's a real person. Some people say he's not. I went and Snagglepuss debuted in a Yogi Bear show. I went and looked in the credits for Mr. Hig Heisler. I found a Hicks Loki and a Harvey Eisenberg who did story sketches, but no Hig Heisler. Several people said it's not a real person. It's a name they made up. I found one conclusive confirmation proof that Hig Heisler exists. According to a post made on the No Homer site January 20th, 2005 by a young man named Bob Servo. There's no joke. Hig Heisler was a cartoonist that worked for Hanna-Barbera. We're eating ourselves, Bobby!
Oh, I was stupid then. On the commentary, Bill Oakley says that's a name we made up.
Yes.
It just sounds like they're perfect for finding...
Because of your... You threw me into a more of a cycle by confirming... you're my research.
I know so much more now. I can't go back and delete that post. But yeah, I mean,
Bob, 12
this
years
took
ago.
Hours. I'm going through Yogi Bear
Fake
credits,
Simpsons
people.
News.
Hick Heisler existed in a world where you could be named Isidore or Ub and be an animator. It's like the perfect old timey animator name.
I love a good one syllable old timey name, a good Rex or
Hick Heisler.
It's a great Oakley Weinstein name they would make up, and it's from...
It's just that they don't do that normally in that case. It would have been a real person, according to my understanding of modern Simpsons references.
Yes, they do that more now. It's kind of just Frizz Freeling, I think. Hick Heisler and Frizz Freeling.
They sound very similar,
I cannot, but you are the third or fourth Google result for that, 20 pages into a forum thread.
I have a
thread.
Lot of cranky, decade-old No Homers Club posts, so don't look at any of those.
A decade old under your same Twitter handle.
Yeah, I've had the same online handle for like 25 years now. So,
did you know that's where I was going with this? Did you try and Google this?
No, because I listened to the commentary and they're like, oh, we made that name up.
God damn it. But that was a great search, Chris, that you found. It took you to Bob.
Thank you, Leonard Maltin, for bothering to write about cartoons in the early 80s with Jerry Beck.
And I mean, That's proof I've been a Simpsons nerd for this long, been, yes. online, being cranky.
Oh, I was sad. That was a really good delivery by a comic book guy, but he didn't say dollars, which is one of my favorite things he says.
I love his new grading of my steward.
And I love comic strips. That was my gateway into comic books. And my city had the awful ones. I asked my grandparents to save because they had other fun stuff that we didn't. But because they lived in an old folks village, they also had the Merry Words and Prince Valiant and all.
Rex Morgan MD.
Rex Morgan MD.
Brenda Starr.
And the Merryworth phone, though, it has to be worth something to somebody.
It's got to be worth more than that cell. But yeah, Merryworth.
It's a really good joke.
It's literally a functional phone. It has some worth. It's in 1994.
But Merryworth is the longest running soap opera comic. Mm-hmm. It started in 1938. It's still being made. Somebody out there is still reading Merryworth. If so, God help you.
See, now you don't. Seek I don't feel help. Stupid about starting a Simpsons podcast. Someone's writing Merryworth.
Someone's reading Merryworth. It's even worse.
I like to think we're the Leonard Maltons of our generation with this podcast.
That's I don't want to. I shouldn't overshadow that. He is one of the first people to write in depth and do a shitload of research, and I love that his young child assistant is Jerry Beck, arguably one of the leading
child. The guy's like 60, Chris.
This book is from like 81.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
and like 81 in the 70s, Leonard Moulton was the only guy to like bring that shit together with the help of Jerry Beck. He's not even credited on the cover.
Look up cartoonresearch.com. Yes, is the newest amazing. Best fuck animation whatever it's called. Cartoon Brew.
Cartoon Brew.
Yeah, fuck that. Go cartoon to Cartoon Research. No, it sucks. The guy who runs it's an idiot.
Then we cut to basically a Glenn Miller style band playing Jacqueline Bouvier's favorite song, which is also the Glenn Miller's big hit Moonlight Serenade.
Let's hear it.
It's very weird. When I looked up this clip, you just see comments of Bioshock. For some people, their only frame of reference for Glenn Miller and Artie Shaw is Bioshock.
It is a beautiful old song.
I love it.
I like it.
You got to dance with your best gal to this.
I got satellite radio like 10 years ago, and I put on this station when my grandfather was still alive, and he was just kind of losing it, and he just started bawling. So when you get nostalgic, he's like, no one's played this music for me for fucking 50 years.
On a less touching note, just imagine how many of your grandmother's asses were grabbed, how many boobs were groped to this song. Think about it. Your grandma.
A lot of furious petting happening in between shore leave outfits.
And this is popularized in 1939. Now, in my research, though, I came across, I did not know there was a lyric version of this.
What?
But there is, and let me...
You can't do that, elephant.
So here's the lyrical version, one of my favorite versions I found, sang by the inimitable Ella Fitzgerald.
Serenade the stars are aglow.
I don't know. That's just pretty.
Very pretty.
I guess it's not that weird. We have people like Brentel Floss just coming up with original lyrics as long as it has existed for years.
Now that's Ella Fitzgerald, not Jacqueline Bouvier's friend Zelda Fitzgerald.
Zelda Fitzgerald.
And the band playing is Red Breen and his Band of Some Esteem, a parody of Les Brown and his Band of Renown, a famous band leader.
Whoa!
And
I had
get
no
this.
Clue.
Les Brown's grandson is Jeff Swampy Marsh, creator of whatever that cartoon is I just forgot the name of, with the platypus and the two kids with the triangle heads on Disney Channel. Help me out here.
God damn it.
This is like
Phineas and Ferb.
There you go. And he also wrote A Rocker's Modern Life and SpongeBob. Wow. So Jeff Swampy Marsh is Les Brown's grandson.
I had no clue. Well, another animation connection there. And Abe's about to make his move and then burns with more energy than he's ever had.
I think he got one of those revitalization treatments from the Springfield Files. It just happened to him.
He just got out of the woods and dressed up and put into this place. But
I'm mainlining Viagra.
Later imply that, Burns can't have any woman he wants. Why would he be with an old woman or go after
even a weird joke later on that acknowledges this?
This is the one bit of this episode I don't like. I felt like this should have been introduced earlier, in Act 1,
it's
where
like
Burns is like, Smithers, I want to find a woman, or something like that, and it sets up that Smithers is mad at him for doing this, but he just appears in Act 2, and this just
starts.
Well, you might
be shocked by Burns' arrival,
right.
Him horning in there, and I liked him saying, Bloom Gasket, Charlie, and that his dance animation is great, but it completely breaks the rules of how good the energy level of Burns, but that is the joke that Burns would be
that kind
of a dancer.
Very unusual. And the song is Sing, Sing, Sing with a Swing, made in 1936 by Louis Prima, but it's mostly known for the Benny Goodman instrumental version, and there is a clip of that.
We'll be right back. that Abe... I liked Abe's frowning reaction, that that's how he's trying to do it, and then that his reaction to it failing too. And
the frowning of a lifetime.
And that is the reaction of many wallflowers, of just like, I'm just going to frown at this person. That'll do it.
They'll stop dancing and acknowledge me.
They'll stop having fun and acknowledge how unhappy I am. Burns reveals that he is literally Satan.
I swear, Monty, you are the devil himself.
Who told you? Yes, well, I'd say you're an angel, but angels don't dance like that.
That would have been my runner-up for line of the show.
Mr. Burns credits his long life to Satan. He couldn't be like, Satan.
Who told you?
Well, it's just that it implies it's an accusation he's so used to hearing, and maybe he's used all of his money to scrub out that perception of him.
That's true. I like that reading of it, Chris.
I love that line reading so much.
And it's nice with they don't do enough with it in this episode, but the nice line reading of Smithers going, just that he doesn't like, he's clearly seen multiple women enter Burns' life, and he hates it.
I wish they would have done more with that.
Yeah, that he's mad jealous of a 90-year-old woman.
Just like, and that him later seeing him and Marge united and not liking it is a really, it's a cute moment. And then comes another great moment, a much more audio-friendly moment of copyright infringement.
Good night, Mrs. Bouvier, wherever you are.
Mr. Simpson, I represent the estate of Jimmy Durante. I have a court order demanding an immediate halt to this unauthorized imitation. Boys?
Well, would it be all right with you if I just laid down in the street and died?
Yes, that would be acceptable.
So before we explain the reference, can you play the Jimmy Durante clip?
That's it for Broadway. Good night to all of you. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Well, it's the same spotlights and everything.
Yeah, and he was wearing the same clothing as Jimmy Durante, the fedora and the trench coat.
And it just goes over.
loud clapping. So, yeah, wow. That was Mrs. Calabash was the nickname for Jimmy Durante's late wife. And he would sign off by saying, you know, goodbye to you wherever you are. And he called her that because her last days were spent in Calabasas, California. Whoa. So that was his way of being a manly man, but still a code to, like, here's my dead wife. Shout out to dead wives everywhere.
How would Oakley and Weinstein have seen this show?
I mean, this is a reference that people knew about.
To a 1958, I would guess, short-lived television show from former movie star Jimmy Durante.
I mean, this actually started on the radio, and he would sign off on the radio, and then it turned into the TV show. So this visual reference was in their heads.
I never knew this until you just played it.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was Jimmy Durante because of what they say. I didn't know where it came from, but there's your answer.
Those guys love television history, and also, I mean, they lived in LA. They could go to the literal Museum of Television History and watch those clips.
And I'm sure they went there a lot in this era.
It's got to feel weird for Abe to lose his girlfriend to his old subordinate from the Flying Hellfish.
Yes,
has to be
we
very
don't
strange.
Know that yet,
which he forgets.
Sorry,
about.
I mean, we don't remember that yet.
That should be in the back of his mind the whole time. Of like, boy, that tontine man, I gotta. This is going to get in the way of it.
Just like in Marge gets a job, Burns is reinvigorated by being in love. And this scene reminds me a lot of that. I like the scene a lot more, though.
I love the way he dances in place is so funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Smithers, guess what happened to me last night?
I don't know, sir. You had sex with that old woman?
She said no to me. Do you know how many women have said no to me? 130, but only one since I've become a billionaire. And she's the one for me. I am in love.
Whoop-de-do, sir.
Yes, whoop-de-doo, whoop-de-doo to the world. Whoop-de-doo, Mr. Florist. Whoop-de-doo, Mr. Physical Trainer. Whoop-de-doo, Mr. President.
I'm happy you finally found love.
Whoop-de-doo, Tarantula Town.
Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo, employees. Everyone who's found true love may leave early today.
That one guy can't even lie to himself.
Just go home early. Pretend you found true love.
Go to a bar and drink alone.
Yeah. I'm disappointed looking into my favorite line from that there is no such thing as Tarantula Town. I wanted there to be an awful toy play set.
Tarantula Town.
Tarantula Town.
I love this detail. It's a 1 second joke that would be so easy to cut, but I love it, of just that Burns owns pet tarantulas, yes, that he keeps, but
he also owns Bill Clinton.
Yes, but he could have, with his money, he could have a giant tarantula thing, but it's a child's tarantula.
I still want the scariest pet in the entire world, and I want to confine him in the smallest thing possible.
Give him a little city to live in.
It's so great that he loves it, and it's just such a great one-off. And then he wants to write a mash note, which is slang for a love letter from the late 1800s. Whoa. Is a mash note. Smithers' sadness and Burns' complete ignorance to it is beautiful, too. He's just like, Just like as Smithers is bawling his eyes out and has to leave the room, he's like, Like, he just doesn't.
He's too in love, and he also doesn't care about Smithers.
Yes, and then this feels like a real Oakley Weinstein callback to classic things of, they remember, like, Smithers tells Burns who the Simpsons are, but then time Smithers tells him the wrong thing. But you need to note, it's a funny joke either way, but to know that history makes this even better.
Dad says this new guy is a repulsive, obnoxious old billionaire. So let's all be extra nice to him.
Ah! Hello? Why, Why, it's Fred Flintstone and his lovely wife, Wilma. Oh, and this must be Little Pebbles. Mind if I come in? I brought chocolates.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
So, doing this doing this series now, I realize, just two episodes ago, Burns was in their house, and Bart was his heir.
Yes.
And for some reason, as a kid, and even as an adult watching this, I never question it. Like, why doesn't Burns know who they are? They don't call attention to them in the show themselves, in the show itself.
It's
but
the same way I didn't ask why Elmer Fudd, you know that rabbit is going to slap you and kick you in the dick for 7 minutes.
But it's just so great they can get away with it without having to explain it.
Yes.
It still gets to operate on cartoon logic.
The weirder thing about that is that he gives the chocolates to the family of the person he's dating and not the person he's dating.
I guess, you know, it's an old-timey thing.
When
you're,
when it's courting. A heart!
Yeah,
why would you give that to...
Love you, family.
It seems strange that Burns would even spend money or care to. Like, he's a bit of a skinflint. I like that Marge immediately hates Burns, and as she should.
He's an awful, awful, awful man. I guess if he makes Mom happy, that's all that really matters.
That's right, money. Your money's happiness is all that money.
Homer wants all of Mr. Burns' money, just like in Burns' heir.
But he won't get it anyway. Then Burns shares a lengthy scene with Bart where it never comes up that two episodes ago he adopted Bart and then Bart almost killed him.
Yeah.
Never comes up, and it's just a cute Mexican standoff with the water guns filled with
Mustard and ketchup.
Mustard and ketchup.
I like when Marge comes in the room, they have the guns at each other's heads. Yeah. It's a really cool pose.
Otherwise known as Chicken Tonight. That's what's in there.
And that I like the bit of Burns calling his bluff, and then Bart's like, okay.
with the mustard.
Then he gives him the money? That seems a little bit
odd. He'll get shot more if he doesn't.
Yeah, you got to hit him with the ketchup
first.
Suit's
already ruined. He's already got a big yellow streak on
it. You can explain the smell of ketchup. Mustard is something you can. It can't be explained away.
Oh, yeah. Then there's a quick bit about them hiring a stripper and a cake, which I had never heard of before as a kid. I mean, very soon I'd see Under Siege and understand the idea of a stripper and a cake.
As a kid, even then, I didn't realize the cake they jump out of wasn't real. So I was like, how do they get into a cake? I don't understand. Yeah. But it's like, no, it's just a cardboard thing shaped like a cake.
Pre-puberty, why ruin all that cake with a naked lady?
It does seem like bullshit. It's just like, okay, you're popping out of a fake cake. Like, I want a real cake with a stripper in it. It's disappointing otherwise. And then there's a Luigi joke, which again shows they're writing this right after Sweet Seymour.
Yeah, I have to apologize. I thought Luigi appeared twice with the same joke. It's actually three times in this series.
and this one's
Mr. No Tip.
Yeah, it's not even the best joke of Luigi's ever had.
He calls Jackie a dried up zombie.
Yes,
that he's captured.
It's super insulting. Yeah, I love it.
Not one of those wet zombies.
A dried up zombie is a captured.
Then Bart, they finally finish the storyline of Bart giving back the money to Homer, which Homer did not miss and will immediately waste.
Yeah.
Dad, I'm really sorry, but I charged $350 on your credit card.
What?
Don't worry, here's the cash.
Woohoo! $350! Now I can buy 70 transcripts of Nightline!
But Dad... Oh, well. He's happy. I'm going to keep this Mary Worth phone right here. Her stern but sensible face will remind me never to do anything so stupid again.
Hey, Bart, you want to go play with that X-ray machine in the abandoned hospital?
Sure.
That's great.
I like how the A-plot resolves the B-plot. Yeah. It's very clean that way.
That's those are the best episodes of The Simpsons where the A-plot and B-plot can intermingle and solve one another and do it very quickly, too, with the cell. Like, Bart's rid of the cell. The Mary Worth phone comes back.
Yeah.
It all ties together. It's really good.
I just remember case of emergency break open glass, it might have been this episode that I always had the ability to steal my parents' credit card and do something like this. I couldn't believe it when I saw it because like I always knew I could have done that, but I would never dare do it.
Bad influence.
And then Bart paid him back. I don't know. I like seeing that now.
I do remember even before this episode, like I don't know why I would watch things like Nightline or like
what choice did you have?
Yeah, Dateline or whatever.
Well, I'd watch 2020 because TGIF would go straight into
and it. They would always say at the end to get a transcript of this program, send money to the network. They still do that, by the way. On CNN.com, you can look up transcripts of all of their news shows. I don't know why you wouldn't.
For free or for money?
For free.
Well, I think they used to. It's one of those things to weed out people who aren't serious. And also the same way, like, we were talking about paying for Carson clips. Like, that's how Johnny Carson's estate makes money, by charging for archival footage.
But, like, I guess it's if you're going to quote this Anderson Cooper 360 report, it's right here.
Yeah, it's right here.
Yeah.
And I do remember this and all PBS stuff. You could. For a lot of money, too. Did we do the math on this?
Well, that's $5 a thing. For 70 Nightline transcripts for $350.
What we're all missing is, how can Nightline exist in the world with Smartline in it?
Oh, my God.
Come on, people.
Oh, my God.
Well, I like that even more, that would mean that Kent Brockman brazenly stole the name of Nightline.
Also, I like to think that Milhouse inviting Bart to go play with an X-ray machine is a... It's calling ahead to Radio Fallout Boy.
All right.
Yes, that is the origin of Fallout Boy. Though actually not the origin of Fallout Boy in the Simpsons comics, which I'll get to that someday, perhaps. But Mrs. Bouvier, Burns asks her to marry him, and she swallows a diamond. I did want to look this up. Like, in 60% of the cases of swallowing a diamond, there is no real damage to you, but that you have a 40% chance that it will cause internal bleeding and maybe even kill you.
I remember a couple things happened. My dog loved to chew the backs of earrings, and several times I had to go to the hospital for internal bleeding because it's swallowing a jagged thing.
Yes, yeah. You swallow jagged metal and see how much you don't bleed in your stomach.
This might actually be my favorite joke, but it's not a line. It's just the unacknowledged crack of the knee. It is so fucking funny.
Immediately after dancing, and Burns has to stick his hand in a boiling chafing dish just to dig the other ring out.
Because he thinks like, well, there must be other rings. I bought more than one diamond ring, and that was a really big diamond that Jacqueline drinks to, and that she chokes on it. Like, if it's that big to choke on it, like, her throat is bleeding. She is definitely bleeding.
That is going to hurt come winter.
My darling, since my kneecaps are filling with fluid as we speak, I'll be brief. Will you marry me?
Oh, Mom, you can't marry Mr. Burns. He's an evil man. Evil schmeevil, Marge. Monty can provide for me. And besides, he's a great kisser.
Yuck!
What about Abe Simpson? Don't you have any feelings for him? Oh, he's a dear, but he's too much of an old fusspot. We're all aware of Grandpa's problems, but compared to Mr. Burns, he's Judge freaking Reinhold. I don't know who that is.
All right, let's get into this joke. I believe Henry explained this to me earlier. We talk a lot about The Simpsons in our regular lives, and we were talking about this joke one day at our old job, and I think Henry... I was like, what does this joke mean? I never knew what it meant outside of Jackie didn't know who the person was. And I think, Henry, you said, this is a joke that would be on a sitcom. Mm-hmm. But the joke is, like, instead of laughing or there being laughter, Jackie's just like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
like, well, I mean, like, what is that what you think it is?
No, I totally think that's it. That they're, I mean, this would have been on Seinfeld. It would have been on any number of or Cheers, like... Compared to him, he's Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Compared to him, like...
It's probably a gag on, like... That's a very old-timey sitcom line, and by the time you would hear it in reruns, it wouldn't make any sense to you. And Judge Reinhold is... I don't think it's a slam on him.
No, I mean...
He's pretty popular at the time.
It's just like any name. Judge Reinhold was not known for being a nice boyfriend or a bad boyfriend.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, he was just like... I mean, it's just a random name they pull out as a topical reference.
I think it's a clever skewering of that type of joke on a sitcom.
I think the later, better joke is like, those writers make me madder than a yak in heat.
Yeah. Well, the... it also feels like reference punishment, just like the other two jokes. Yeah. Just like, he's better than that. Like, wonderful. Well, this old woman wouldn't know who you're talking about.
I want our commenters to tell us, what do you think this joke means? We get a lot of great interpretations.
Yeah. I always thought it was like Grandpa's a stud. Like, mm-hmm. he's a handsome guy, like Judge Reinhold is, right?
I mean, according to your perception, Dave, and I don't want to change that at all.
I don't know.
Loving Judge Reinhold.
He was slaying it and vice versa.
He was sexy as shit and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I love that smash cut to Marge saying
yes.
no
it's so
when,
good.
When she'd be saying it's, yes.
That kind of pacing is so outlandish for television at this point. Like, I can't stop being in awe of it in 1993.
And a condom joke is very, it's a little yeah. weak, but it is funny how Abe says it, the latest. Condo.
But again, I'm 14 years old when this episode's out. Like, I don't really know what a condom is.
It would have been the first time I saw a condom the first time I saw a bong, all the Simpsons. Mm-hmm.
Well, they wouldn't air. I remember there was a sitcom on TV where they talked about condoms and they didn't air it on network because they're like, no, this is too... that show where... Characters from the 1950s lived next door to people in the now in the 90s.
Hi, Honey, I'm Home?
Yes.
I brushed right over it. The Melrose Place was ending, and it was supposed to be the first gay kiss on television, and they bowed to advertiser and affiliate pressure and fade to black before it happens. Or cut to like a reaction from somebody looking at them in the window.
That's so
lame. This is our lifetime. Like... Mm. We won't stand by and let this run on Kentucky Fox.
It'll destroy America. Yes. In Jacksonville, Florida, mm-hmm. they wouldn't air NYPD Blue for three seasons because, like, this is too dirty. And then they finally did, like, an apology video of, like, well, not an apology, but saying, we don't like that we're showing this, but we're finally doing it. Fine, here it is. But don't let kids watch this.
Finally see Dennis Franz's ass. I know you've been waiting for this.
Then I love the sign gag of private wedding. Please worship elsewhere. though it's weird that Barney, what's Barney doing at that wedding? Like, I guess as a seat filler is what his job is, but...
Free booze?
Yeah, reception. He's there for the reception.
Free booze?
Yes. I think it's Homer probably got like two or three pity invites. Like, okay, you can bring people so you don't mess up the rest of the party. You
know, as far as the show, the chronology of the show goes, Grandpa Barney might be the person Barney's on the longest, considering how long him and Homer have been friends.
That's true. They've been friends for 20 years at this point.
Didn't Abe serve with... Actually, they both served with...
So there we go. Yeah. It's the connection.
I mean, the writers didn't know that
wrapped
yet.
Up in a tight little package.
When Bert should be on his best behavior, he is the worst groom ever.
That's right at the finish line.
And to Hazor on the occasion of their matrimony, much in the same...
We've heard enough about Blizzblaz and him already. Get to the bloody point.
Do you, Charles Montgomery Burns, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife?
I do. The ring, you little imbecile, before I really lose my temper.
Oh. Yes. I know.
I requested no romantic music.
Just that kick in Bart's butt. I'm just like, that's so mean. Yes, it was. In this scene is where Lovejoy says Jacqueline Bouvier. Mm-hmm.
Jacqueline Bouvier. Yeah. And the Bible quote is not real, but it's convincing enough that it sounds like an Old Testament story.
Yep. I remember it from Virtual Springfield. The Lovejoy joke with his voice is that he endlessly says, blank begat blank, begat blank, begat blank, which is, I believe, how the New Testament starts just to show Jesus' connection to Abraham, I believe it is, but... Just that it's an odd thing that Lovejoy is really into the lineage or like who married who or who met who, but also that Blizzblaz and him. So then we get to the ending, which is
might be lost time, very
out of nowhere.
I mean, The Graduate is sort of timeless in its own way. I don't think people will forget about it.
Wayne's World 2, yeah.
Do you, Jacqueline Bouvier, take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband?
Oh, Monty, my favorite song.
I specifically requested no romantic music. What?
Mrs. Bouvier! Honey, are you sure you want to be Mrs. Montgomery Burns? Wouldn't you rather be Mrs. Abraham J. Simpson?
No.
Oh.
I don't want to be either.
Hot diggity damn! That's good enough for me!
Abe will settle for that. And I have a clip of the actual Graduate clip that they're parodying. The very famous clip. We're good.
Take care of him. He's too late.
Can somebody check. Is Dustin Hoffman okay? I feel like I don't see him anymore. I'm worried about him.
You have that theory about a lot of people. Some people just don't want to be in the public spotlight anymore.
I looked him up. He's still acting. He's still in a couple things a year. But when I'm growing up, he was like
Midler in one of the Fokker movies.
That was 10 years.
It was 10 years ago. Shit. Like, but he was in every. He was like one of the biggest stars ever. Dustin Hoffman.
Be in Dirty Grandpa 2. Don't worry.
Maybe he's just going to the stage. But yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen The Graduate. I only watched it because every goddamn thing referenced it in the 90s.
Same here.
Like this show, Wayne's World 2, and also the the Gary Shandling show they had on Anne
Bancroft. And Lisa Substitute with Dustin Hoffman in it references.
Yeah.
Mrs.
Yeah,
Krabappel, you're trying to seduce me.
I mean, I watched it about 10 years ago just to get all the references I'd seen before.
It's a
great
film.
It's great, but I don't know if anyone identifies with Benjamin, the main character, anymore because he sucks. Halfway through the movie, he just becomes a crazy stalker.
This is true, but I think that is revealed in the ending. The reality, his reality unfolds before the audience in the ending that is also parodied here.
But I mean, I think people identify with him a lot, that character. That's why they like the movie, but I don't think you can watch that movie like that anymore.
I will say the movie defends itself by showing that ending as they both come to the realization of what they've done. This grand romantic gesture brought upon by lust and young testosterone, we actually have to do this.
Sound of silence.
They play the sound of silence.
Yeah, but it's like what the director intends for the audience to get and what the audience actually gets is a different story, which is why racists like the movie American History X. The most racist kids in my high school love that movie.
But I think the ending is really bold in The Graduate. It is saying that all this was for nothing, and you don't have the burden of watching these people as they try and make it work.
It was Mike Nichols directed it, he was showing, like, if I had cut 30 seconds earlier, you'd just have created a happy ending. But to show this uncomfortableness of them dealing with their decision to have a Hollywood ending, you're then like, oh, this is weird.
I think it's technically crazy that he did that.
No, it's a great – it was a landmark comedy film, which is why so many sitcom writers of the 90s and 80s did a ton of jokes about
it. Yeah, and to both the Bob and – like the parodies of The Graduate usually come from someone interrupting the wedding successfully.
Yeah.
And only The Simpsons I'd seen like did the long unflinching look of the what do we do now.
Also, that fall should have killed Grandpa. Yeah.
It lands on broken glass.
Yeah. It's a very rubber band reality of this episode where – Mr. Burns can both dance like a maniac and have his knee hurt for just kneeling for 5 seconds. That Abe can fall that much and not die.
I really like the animation of the way his face splats on the ground. Like it's a 3 seconds of creativity.
And because of how much I watch this in Wayne's World 2, it creates the constant confusion of I get confused about where Simpsons jokes appear, but I like, did Wayne Campbell fall out of the window?
I think Grandpa was the only one who fell out of the window.
Yeah. I know, but the I can build that in my mind. Like, I'm not sure which joke is which. Because in Wayne's World 2, he goes to the wrong church, interrupts the wrong wedding.
That's why you don't see plexiglass in front of the organs anymore.
It's what I loved in the It's Gary Shandling Show parody of it, that he meets the guy who for one brief scene in The Graduate, is the landlord for Dustin Hoffman, but he was more famous as the replacement for Mr. Furley on Three's Company. Mm-hmm. So when he's in Gary Shandling's show, Gary Shandling's like, well, I don't really want to make a Three's Company reference. He's like, no, I was in The Graduate. Watch. I'm in one scene. I'm in the movie.
Is that Norman Fell?
Yes.
Yeah. With Norman Fell as Zeus.
And then we go out, the show and this episode go out on a Sound of Silence parody.
I love
called
it.
The Sound of Grandpa.
The second parody by Kip Lennon and the third covers, I guess you call it the third cover song with that and Raindrops from Duffless.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but he did the Cheers parody. I had written down and the softball parody. I forgot that was the artist. The Simpsons got the artist to cover his own song for that episode.
Getting Kip Lennon is so great.
Yeah,
that they get that he was hired as Michael Jackson's guy, and then they just kept calling him when they needed a song.
He's covering a good singer,
a song from a Dustin Hoffman movie, and Dustin Hoffman was with Michael Jackson in Itchy and Scratchy movie.
Whoa. It's all connected.
What a connection. We just red-pilled the shit of this entire program.
Now I hate women.
And Oakley and Weinstein said that this song is like an ASCAP song that they wrote, so they've gotten literally pennies off of this song.
And no one at all can stand the sound of Grandpa. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you can stand the sound of us. We're talking Simpsons, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yes.
I have been your host. Before I talk about that, what do we think about this episode? I'm sorry I cut us off too fast.
That's cool.
Except for the next episode, really one of the more cartoony and outlandish Simpsons Simpsons episodes that there have been so far.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. It is a funny story of old people falling in love. Yeah. But the biggest knock I'll give against it from being an all-time great is that it is kind of, there's filler reference jokes. And they're funny, but they're still like, well, this is just filler. This is just to kill time.
You're
but,
just saying that because you're doing the critic now, and you know how much they do movie references.
In the animation cell, B story was a really good B story. One of my favorites in the series.
Yeah, I think the B story stuff really raised this episode for me, because I remember as a kid, like, this is just a story of old people, and like, I don't really know my grandparents all that well, because they all lived in Ireland, so it's just like, well, I'm just old people.
I
want
enjoyed
more about the animation cell.
I just enjoyed jokes at the expense of old people.
Yes. In hindsight, I enjoyed that a lot, but I think I probably was turned off by it as a young kid.
Didn't get half of the references in this episode.
No way.
We explained them all to you on this episode of Talking Simpsons. Thanks for listening, everybody. We dove pretty deep into some great topics here. Mm-hmm. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I'm everywhere as Bob Servo, as Chris explained. You can also find my other podcast, Retronauts, at retronauts.com. That is a classic gaming podcast. Mm-hmm. Every Monday and occasionally on Friday, we give you a bonus episode. Classic gaming topics. We've done a lot of Simpsons games in here. So just go to retronauts.com or look for Retronauts on your podcast device and find a topic that interests you, and you will probably like it. Not a guarantee.
And, of course, if you love this podcast, you maybe want to support it on its own Patreon. Bob and I, again, quit our jobs to start up patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. We've had so many people already sign up for it to get... You get an episode, each episode early from now on, and commercials free a week early on patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, plus tons of bonus stuff. There's already a bunch of bonus stuff on there and more to come, including a Patreon community podcast, the second episode of Talking Critic with more to come there, and an interview with one of the original producers on classic Simpsons video games.
Wowzers. And Laser Time is the show that we do. You guys appear in it all the time this point. And we're supported by Patreon as well. Patreon.com/LaserTime, which also helped launch 302010, our weekly look back 3020 and 10 years ago, as well as Video Game Apocalypse, our weekly video game show, and Bonus Time, David.
Yes.
Save me from talking.
Yeah, we talk about stuff that we're into nowadays. I'm sure we'll be talking about Baby Driver. Well, we probably have done it a couple weeks back. Yeah. But yeah, fun show that we shoot the breeze on every week. Yeah. And we also do have tons of movie commentaries there. Probably nothing as old as The Graduate, but we will
At this point, it's the 10th anniversary of The Simpsons. I want to, because we're recording a little advanced, I want to make sure we fucking do that.
Oh, we will.
Oh, so much fun. Yeah. I think the movie is fantastic.
I will read my original review of it on the air. I wrote for a college newspaper. Kent Stater, I pan the movie.
And if you're craving more Marge and Abe Simpson interaction, it's in that movie, so as I mentioned before.
It really is. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with Secrets of a Successful Marriage. We'll see you then.
Ooh. Turn off that racket!
Yeah, fat chance, pups.
Hello, Grandpa, my old friend. Your busy day is at an end. Your exploits have been sad and boring. They tell a tale that's worth ignoring. When you're alone, the words of your story will echo down the rest home hall. No one at all can stand the sound of Grandpa.
I first took a fancy to Mrs. Bouvier because her raspy voice reminded me of my old Victrola. Oh, it was a fine machine with a vulcanized rubber listening tube which you crammed in your ear. The tube would go in easier with some sort of lubricant like linseed oil or Dr. Shumway's... I'm sorry.